This is Intersection. I'm Matthew Petty. Joe Biden and Kamala Harris were sworn in at a pared-down presidential inauguration ceremony at the White House yesterday. The new administration inherits some huge challenges, none more urgent than the ongoing pandemic, which has killed more than 400,000 Americans. Today, we're taking a closer look at what the first 100 days of the presidency means for Central Florida and what this new administration may do differently. When it comes to the pandemic, the response to the virus and the vaccine rollout, what changes can we expect? Well, joining Intersection for more, Dr. Amish Adelja. He is the senior scholar with Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. Dr. Adelja, welcome back.
Thank you for having me.
Also joined by Justin Senior. He's the chief executive of the Safety Net Hospital Alliance of Florida. Justin, thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And we're joined also by Abe Abariah, health reporter with WMFE. Abe, thanks as always.
Thank you.
Well, let's get the long view first. Dr. Adelja, back in December, you spoke to us on this show. You warned of a potentially pretty grim few months as the pandemic kicked in over the winter. From what you've seen over the last few weeks, how is that scenario playing out?
Well, I think it played out as we predicted. We knew there were going to be an inordinate number of deaths. We knew that hospitals would be worrying about capacity on a day-to-day basis. And we knew that there would probably be some hiccups with vaccine rollout. And I think all of that has really proven to be true. I think what we saw is a lot of intensity of spread related to Thanksgiving and Christmas and New Year's. And we kind of didn't get the worst of it, but it was enough to really make hospitals, especially in places like Southern California, really worry about their viability based on the fact that they were completely inundated. They were running out of things like hospital beds. The ambulances were being diverted. They were worried about hospitals being able to pump enough oxygen through their pipes to be able to get to all the patients. You know, all of that was something we knew was going to happen. And I think we still have a couple more weeks that are going to be rough with thousands of deaths per day occurring.
Yeah, you're sort of talking about it in the past tense, but it strikes me that, different things could happen down the track. And we have new variants popping up in Florida as well as other parts of the country. Is that a concern for you as well?
Yes, I think that the new variants, the big concern I have is that if they are indeed more transmissible, we are going to see them come to dominate, and people are going to have to be more on guard for these new variants because it's going to be more likely that you contract them when you're exposed. So we have to get better at hand washing, wearing face coverings, avoiding crowded and congregated places. And this really puts a lot of pressure on getting as many vaccines into people's arms as possible. We're basically in a race between these new variants and our vaccination pace.
Mm-hmm. Speaking about what we might expect from the new federal administration, Joe Biden has talked about a national mask mandate. Is it that simple? And do you think a step like that could make a significant impact on slowing down the pandemic at this stage?
Well, right now, we've got a lot of community transmission, so no action is going to turn around this pandemic overnight, short of basically vaccinating all of the eligible population. But I do think trying to embrace the science, and that science has evolved over the pandemic, that shows that face coverings can decrease transmission. I think that makes a big difference. And seeing leadership from the president is something that we've sorely lacked for most of this pandemic, where you see what we're seeing with President-elect Biden is that he's completely engaged in this pandemic. It's been a major priority. He's given multiple speeches. He's actually articulated many plans which incorporate many things that everybody in this field that's been studying pandemic preparedness has been asking for basically a year now. So I do think there is hope. And I think that the mask policy of the Biden administration will be one that reflects science, and it will set an example and set a new tone with how we deal with this pandemic.
Abe, I want to bring you into this conversation. Let's talk about vaccinations for a minute. The first wave of Floridians who began to be vaccinated weeks ago now completing their doses of the full course of the vaccine. The Department of Health says around 100,000 people so far have been vaccinated. Nearly 1 million have had their first doses at least. What are you hearing from frontline healthcare workers about how this rollout is going? Because they were the first to line up, roll up their sleeves and get those shots.
So far it's been going relatively smoothly when you talk to the frontline healthcare workers. They've been happy to get this vaccine. And there's a lot of demand, as obviously we've been reporting on. Pretty much any time either a health department or a hospital opens up, or even Publix opens up some way to get some way for you to get a vaccine, then you're seeing those slots being taken up pretty much immediately. Kind of big picture, as you mentioned, we've got about 2 million doses of the vaccine have been sent to Florida, according to the CDC. About 56% of those have actually been used. Now, 740,000 in the last 2 weeks. It's about 52,000 a day. So that is, you know, starting to ramp up. We're starting to see bigger numbers of people getting vaccinated per day. But, you know, we are seeing about 45,000 people who are behind, meaning they've already got the one dose, they're due for their second, and they haven't gotten it yet. And so the concern there is that you're going to start seeing people who maybe are seeing posts on social media from people who have gotten the second dose of the vaccine and had a stronger reaction to it, where they, you know, developed a fever, felt bad, got, you know, some of those symptoms that are an indication that the vaccine is working, but, mm-hmm. you know, do make you feel lousy for a couple of days. So the worry is that some of that is starting to make it, you know, round, and that people are starting to intentionally avoid getting their second dose as opposed to maybe just being, you know, a week or two behind. Mm-hmm. But from the big picture perspective, you know, Dr. Adalja can talk to this. You're looking 70 to 80% of the population getting vaccinated for some level of herd immunity. And right now, with the number of people we've got that have gotten the full vaccination, we're still less than 0.5% of the entire population of Florida getting vaccinated. So there's still a very, very long way to go until we start seeing numbers of vaccinations that could have an impact on the caseloads that we're seeing every day and the, you know, downstream impacts to hospitals and deaths.
Right. Well, Dr. Adalja, to that point, I mean, is Florida just a kind of a snapshot of the way the entire nation is playing out? Are we seeing some states kind of get this rollout done a little more smoothly?
There are some states that are doing better than others. I would single out West Virginia, the Dakotas, because they've kind of done this on their own, and their state health departments have been able to move rapidly. West Virginia, instead of engaging the major pharmacy chains, which they don't really have in many parts of West Virginia, worked with independent pharmacies, and they were able to move very, very quickly. And, you know, it's not surprising. West Virginia is a state that leads with vaccinations, kind of surprisingly to many people, but when it comes to measles vaccines, they have the highest rates in the country. So there are some states that are doing better than others, but I think as a nation at all, in the entire picture, we have to basically have an all-hands-on-deck approach, kind of a warlike atmosphere to try and get vaccine into people's arms and really pull out all the stops, because the longer it takes to get people vaccinated, the longer this pandemic will linger on and the longer our hospitals will worry about their capacity.
Well, that's probably a good point to bring you into this conversation, Justin Senior, with the Florida Safety Net Hospital Network. Speaking kind of like a warlike footing, we have heard stories from frontline staffers in hospitals about what it's like being on COVID wards. But when you think about rolling out the vaccine and hospitals in Florida, as they have in many states, have played a very important role in getting those vaccines into people's arms. What's your kind of sense of how things are going? Is it sort of working how you anticipated when you started getting your hands on the first doses, you know, several weeks ago?
It's working as anticipated. I think it's going reasonably well. I don't think you can necessarily get something that is this logistically complicated off the ground without any hitches. But ultimately, I think that hospitals in Florida and probably around the country are doing a pretty good job. Our hospitals are certainly not sitting on vaccine. They've definitely had enough willing takers, and they played obviously a big role in getting their own frontline healthcare staff vaccinated, and have actually pivoted during January to vaccinating the 65 and over population, mm-hmm. and have done a very large percentage of the 65 and over. You know, the hope here and the strategy here is to make sure that population is vaccinated. If you can get the long-term care resident community vaccinated and you can get the 65 and over population vaccinated in Florida, that population has been responsible for about 60% of the hospitalizations in the state and has been responsible for probably approaching 90% of the fatality. So you can really change the game if you can have the follow-through that you need over the course of the next couple of months to get all of that population or as much of that population as you possibly can vaccinated.
Is there another way to look at it, though? I mean, talking about the impacts, we're seeing that in the 65 and older population because they're more vulnerable. Hospitalizations and mortality, to your point, tend to affect that group of the population more. But if you were to vaccinate the population that is doing more of the spreading, the younger population, would that also be an effective method of getting a handle on this?
I think that ultimately the CDC recommendations right now, as well as the strategy in Florida, is probably the right one. We actually are seeing a bit of a decline in the hospital census, and it never quite got to the point in January that it reached back in July. So the peak so far has not been as high, and hopefully we can turn the corner. And there are two kind of aspects to turning the corner. When it comes to frontline healthcare workers, one of the biggest problems back in July, and I assume as other hospital systems around the country were reaching the peak in recent weeks, one of the big problems is when it's very prevalent in the community, your staff is going to catch COVID in the community, regardless of all the precautions that you take at the hospital itself in terms of stopping the spread of infection. And hospitals are in the business of infection control. But right. people catch it in the community. When you have hundreds of staffers knocked offline, it really reduces your capacity. You might have brick and mortar that says you have 1,600 beds, but you can't staff it. And it really creates an issue. So getting the frontline healthcare workers done is a big deal. It really reduces the chance that you're going to overwhelm your actual physical plant and your beds. And then, of course, getting the people that are most likely to end up in the hospital vaccinated, I think, is the right way to prioritize it. And I think hopefully we're starting to see some of that impact right now. Because, like I said, over the last 7 to 10 days, we've seen a pretty strong decline in hospitalizations, the hospital census in the state of Florida.
If you're just joining me, my guest, Justin Senior, he is the chief executive of the Safety Net Hospital Alliance of Florida. We're also joined by Dr. Amish Adulja, senior scholar with Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security, and WMFE health reporter Abe Abariah. Abe, I want to come back to you for a moment, and let's bring this conversation back to where we started, which was what difference may we see, or what kind of approach may we see from this new Biden administration? One of the things he has talked about is this notion of vaccinating 100 million people in the first 100 days of his presidency. Given what we know about how the rollout has gone so far, what's your sense of how that might play out over the next 3 months?
The big kind of question mark with getting to 100 million vaccinations in 100 days, you know, because we are seeing the ramp up right now, and we are seeing increased numbers across the country as, you know, some of the kinks get worked out and the supply chain gets worked out. The big kind of question mark, though, is going to be the Johnson & Johnson vaccine and what ultimately ends up happening with that. They did release some data last week that was, so far so good. We haven't seen a lot of the efficacy numbers yet. They haven't actually released some of that, so we're waiting on some of those. But if the Johnson & Johnson vaccine ultimately is effective and is able to go before the FDA and get emergency use authorization, this is a vaccine that is a potentially one shot rather than two shots, which takes away a lot of the logistical issues that you're seeing. And then you're talking about Johnson & Johnson, which, you know, Fierce Pharma was reporting back in November that Johnson & Johnson is talking about having the potential to manufacture a billion doses in 2021. So, if you're talking about, really being able to scale up a vaccination program, Johnson & Johnson is probably going to be sort of the best hope for that. And Governor Ron DeSantis has talked about that very specifically with essential workers and how, you know, maybe that Johnson & Johnson vaccine is when you start allowing people who are under 65 get vaccinated, because then you can drop off, you can drop off the vaccine at Disney and you know, have them vaccinate a bunch of their workers and, find different creative ways to get more and more people vaccinated with that. You know, another one of the things that the Biden administration has been talking about is sort of bringing in FEMA to have vaccination sites across the country. And the governor has sort of basically said he's not really interested in that. He's looking at that as, well, you know, the state of Florida is already doing, you know, drive-through vaccination sites, and bringing in the federal government's going to add another layer of bureaucracy and it's going to make it more difficult. I'm not sure how, you know, whether that's going to be an accepted view across the healthcare community necessarily, because I think there's a lot of people who are looking at the number of vaccines that have been delivered to Florida but haven't been administered and saying, you know, pretty much do anything you can to let all the stopgaps out and get as many people vaccinated as possible. So we'll have to wait and see on what that approach ends up looking like, you know, after the inauguration, after, you know, the president starts, you know, really ramping up.
And one of the things that has been a bit of a question mark too has been the messaging around it, like how much vaccine is in reserve? But are those doses actually available if they want to get them out quicker? There's been some confusion around that. Do you anticipate, Abe, that we may get a little more clarity with as the new administration kind of starts rolling with this plan to get these vaccines into the arms of Americans?
I would expect there to be some more clarity because one of the things that the Biden administration has put an emphasis on, at least in its transition process, has been transparency. They have talked about building some of these public-facing dashboards that will give a little bit more information. You know, what you're talking about as far as the confusion right now with Moderna and Pfizer, those are two dose vaccines, and the federal government was originally holding that second dose in reserve, giving it to the states. The states were flooding, you know, flooding the field, I think would be the sports term, to get all those doses out while letting the federal government hold the reserve. Well, HHS came out and said, we're going to change policy on that. We're going to go ahead and start sending that second dose out. And it Washington Post has done some reporting that it appears that that has already been happening. So whether or not there is actually a reserve that's going to be able to be increased so that we're getting more doses to states, you know, going forward is a bit of a question mark. Now, hopefully, you know, we'll start seeing a little bit more transparency and a little bit more clarity because there is some mixed messaging between, you know, Governor Ron DeSantis, HHS Secretary, Trump administration. There's sort of some mixed messages there on what is actually available to come down. So it's a bit of a question mark, but I would expect it to change, at least at the federal level, as far as the transparency.
Indeed. Justin Senior, back to you for a moment, if I could. You were talking about staffing before and the fact that there has been a real impact on frontline healthcare workers getting sick in the community, not being able to staff up those hospital beds that are so sorely needed for folks who are getting sick from COVID-19 and having to be hospitalized. I mean, is there anything that a new administration can do there, or are we really talking about apples and oranges? This is something that, if anything, maybe a state government could help out with. Are you looking for some change there that could help out hospitals that are struggling to sort of meet the demand?
I think that piece, we're a long way toward potentially solving that piece because the frontline healthcare workers have almost all received the first shot and are about to receive their second. So that, I think, meant we may have been able to pull that population to safety. Let me say, I think that the DeSantis administration really would have liked to have set a number. We want X number of million people vaccinated in Florida 65 and over by a certain date, but no knowledge of what the supply was going to be was the missing piece there, right? Without knowing what they were going to be supplied, it was very difficult for them to set a goal. I think the Biden administration is doing the right thing by saying, this is the number that we want, and this is the date that we want it done by, because I think that sends the message to manufacturers, to distributors, and to the states in terms of exactly what is going to be expected of them, and they can set their goals and build their infrastructure accordingly. Our hospitals have the ability, with about 48 hours notice, maybe 72 hours notice, to be able to do 20 to 25,000 vaccinations a day. And we're just 14 hospital systems out of over 200 hospitals in the state of Florida, and we have that ability. That's not counting what CVS and Walgreens and Publix might be able to bring to bear. We could actually get that up with about 7 to 10 days to between 40 to 45,000. The governor knows that. There's been good communication in terms of what our capacity is. But ultimately, we need to know what the supply is going to be. And so by the Biden administration saying this is our expectation, hopefully that does help the situation so that everybody can kind of rise to the level to meet that expectation.
Given the fact that your network of hospitals is, you know, by its very nature, a network of safety net hospitals, are you feeling the impact of this pandemic more than other hospital systems?
Yes, definitely. Our hospitals have seen, you know, nearly 60% of the COVID patients in the state of Florida. Because we have academic medical centers in our group, we have been involved in about half of the clinical trials. So there's a lot of movement in terms of advancing the science, but just a lot of patients as well. And ultimately, you know, the patients being at our hospitals means that we felt all of the PPE supply issues back in the spring. It's been an extremely difficult year. And for the healthcare workers, it is an extremely stressful environment to be working in.
Is that PPE issue, has that been resolved? Are we going to be looking at any scenario in the next few months where you know, you would be hoping that the federal government might requisition companies to start manufacturing things like ventilators and masks and gowns and gloves?
By the summer, the PPE issue was significantly better than it had been in the spring. So our hospitals were not running short of PPE. They were able to maintain 15 to 30-day supplies on hand. And actually, their ability to perform elective procedures in Florida was tied to their ability to be able to supply their own personal protective equipment. So if they didn't have enough personal protective equipment and they had to go into the state's emergency supply, they had to start postponing elective procedures. So ultimately, our hospitals, by and large, were able to do it. And PPE became a much better situation over the summer and has been better since then. But it was definitely a really tight situation back in March, April, and May.
Mm-hmm. Dr. Amish Adelja with Johns Hopkins, if I could come back to you for a moment. One of the things I guess there's been a wee bit of confusion about over the last 9-10 months has been the role of some of those federal agencies like the NIH, the CDC. Are we going to see more of them, more of the officials from those agencies kind of front and center in the next few months, do you think, with this new administration?
I do think that's going to be the case. If you go back to any other public health emergency, you often saw the CDC speaking directly to the public on a day-to-day basis. And I think that's going to be the norm, again, with a new CDC director, with the depoliticization of some of the workings of the CDC. I think we will hear a lot more from them, a lot more risk guidance that's going to come from the CDC. I do think you'll also see many scientists at the NIH not be really managed the way they were from the White House level. And I do think that that's going to be all for the better, because we want to hear more from the scientists, more from the public health authorities, and less from the politicians. That we want the people who are experts to be guiding this response and to be speaking directly to the American public to help them understand what's going on and how to make better choices so that they don't expose themselves or others to this virus and know what to expect with the vaccine.
I just wonder, though, how much work there's going to be involved in that. And if you think about vaccinations in some communities where there's a level of skepticism already, for example, in some parts of the African-American community, for example, not necessarily really eager to get in on a vaccination program, how much work is going to need to be done and how much can be done by a new administration to sort of change that?
I think there's a tremendous amount of work that needs to be done. And I do think that we are going to have to be very proactive and really be transparent about this vaccine and the benefits, the risks, and really try and persuade people that the vaccine is in their best interest. And I think that we have data on our side, we have science on our side, and I think when we get out of this kind of immediate atmosphere of misinformation and outright lying and evasion that was coming from the White House, you're probably going to see more willingness to accept the science based on this vaccine. But I do think that the vaccine hesitancy movement and the anti-vaccine movement is going to be coming out strong against this vaccine, especially as we start vaccinating the general public. And we're going to not have to be in the, we don't want to be in a position where they're setting the agenda and we're responding to their arbitrary claims. So I do think there's going to be a lot of work that needs to be done with vaccine communication, but we've done that before. We've done it with measles, we've done it with influenza, and we've done it with the HPV Gardasil vaccine. So we're going to have to really pull out all the stops to really convince people that this is in their best interest, and it is in their best interest. You know, I'm somebody that got vaccinated the moment I was able to be.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just say on the hesitancy issue, boy, people 65 and over, there's almost no hesitancy.
Right.
We saw more hesitancy here in the healthcare workers, oddly enough. But as soon as they started getting it, the hesitancy really wore away. You know, it's like 50 when our hospitals would say, show of hands, who's willing to take it among the front line? Back in November, boy, it was 50%. But way more than that ended up getting it. It was 50% got in the first wave. It got up to 60 or 70%. But I think the number that is willing to take it in the 65 and over is probably approaching 95%. I mean, it is really high. They're scared, and they want this over with.
There is, I think, a level of difficulty, though, in trying to sort of sell these messages at the same time, right? Because on the one hand, you have people saying, well, look, if I get the vaccine, doesn't that protect me? On the other hand, you have agencies saying, look, just because you have a vaccine doesn't mean you need to stop taking those precautions. So how do you kind of balance those conflicting messages? Because what we are hearing from public health officials is, look, just because there's a vaccine out there and we are slowly getting the population vaccinated, you still have to take these precautions, keep wearing masks, keep practicing social distancing. And for a lot of people, that's like kind of the last straw. They're like, I've had 10 months of this, enough already.
I think this is an important topic that needs a lot more discussion, because there is a little bit of a split within our field where many of the infectious disease physicians might be differing a little bit from their public health counterparts, where many of us are talking about the fact that after someone has gotten two doses of the vaccine and waited about 2 weeks, it's very unlikely that they're going to pose a risk of transmission. We know this virus, that this vaccine is very effective at preventing symptomatic illness. We're getting data imminently about that, the fact that it also does decrease transmission risks. We don't know how much, but, you know, for example, if it's two vaccinated people that are fully vaccinated, them being together, there's no risk there. And we know that this vaccine, as more and more people get it, is going to have some impact on transmission. So I do think we have to start trying to not undersell this vaccine, because this vaccine is going to be game-changing, and it will decrease transmission risks, and it will lead to the lifting of some of these guidances. And I think we have to really get the data behind us to show that, to be able to say it for sure. But many of us know that with this vaccine, we're going to see decreased contagiousness amongst people. So I think this is going to be another challenge that we have to work out within our own community to be able to have a message of hope with this vaccine. And I am worried about the underselling of the vaccine for just the reasons you've said, that this may discourage people from getting it, because if they think it's not going to change anything in their life, why will they get it?
Indeed. Well, we've been speaking with Dr. Amish Adalja. He is a senior scholar with the Johns Hopkins Center for Health Security. Dr. Adalja, thanks as always for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
We're also joined by Justin Senior. He's the chief executive of the Safety Net Hospital Alliance of Florida. Justin, thank you so much for your time as well.
Thank you for having me.
And Abe Abaraya, WMFE's health reporter. Abe, thanks as always.
Thank you.
Up next, President Trump's immigration policy focused on his promise of a border wall and keeping people out of the U.S. What will the first 100 days of the Biden administration mean for undocumented immigrants and DACA recipients in Florida? We'll discuss when Intersection returns in a minute.